Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So, Jason, CC Sabathia is officially placed on the disabled list with inflammation in the right knee. It was the same knee that he had operated on a few years ago, I believe, for a torn meniscus. How sad is the decline of former Cleveland Indians ace CC Sabathia? Maybe not so sad because he's not pitching for the Indians anymore.
I mean, it kind of proves them right, right?
I suppose to a degree, yeah.
Well, I mean,
I guess it kind of reaffirmed that they knew it. 34 or 35, however long, you know, they didn't want to pay him that big contract that the Yankees wanted to pay him. Yeah.
Well, I mean, basically they didn't want this, right?
Yeah.
Like they, I mean, knew, it, like when you go through, they traded him in 2008. And that year, when you combine his time with Cleveland and Milwaukee, he went 17-10. The year before he was 19-7, the year before he was 12-11, then 15-10, on and on and on. But since that time, he went 19-8, 21-7, 19-8, and then 15-6, 14-13, all while his ERA just creeps up. Like in 2012, he had a 3.38 ERA, which was his worst in several seasons, and last year was 4.78, and this year, 5.28.
Oh, not good. Not good for my fantasy team either.
And this is while he is making
so much money.
He signed, I don't know the exact, wait, I can find it here.
He still has another right 2 years to go on this contract.
He has 2 years to go on this contract. He's making $23 million this year. He'll make $23 million next year, $25 million the year after that, and then a $25 million vesting option the following year that has a $5 million buyout.
Which means I'm sure the Yankees are hoping that there are a lot more DL stints in his future.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because you want me to read the ways that the option voids itself?
Ooh, yes, please.
Way number one that it voids, does not end 2016 on the disabled list with a left shoulder injury. Number two, does not spend more than 45 days in 2016 on the DL with a left shoulder injury. Number three, does not make more than 6 relief appearances in 2016 because of a left shoulder injury. I think there's a concern about his left shoulder, I'm just going to guess.
That seemed to be the underlying theme of that option.
But so, to kind of wrap it up, the year they traded him, he was making $11 million. The next year, he made $15 million, and every year after that, he's in the $23, $24, $25 range. That's what they didn't want to pay for a guy with a 4 or 5 ERA.
It turns out the curve on productivity for large starting pitchers is very steep. It's a very, very steep curve.
Yeah.
When you are a 300-pound starting pitcher.
Well, yeah, because all of a sudden, like in 1 year, his WAR was cut in half.
The velocity thing, I just can't get over that. Every time I see him throw like an 86-mile-an-hour cut fastball, I just go, "What happened? You sad shell of yourself."
Yeah. I don't know.
It has to be frustrating. I mean, it would have to drive you mad if you're used to going out there pumping like 93-mile-an-hour gas and now you're down to 86.
I'm sure it drives him mad. So mad he goes right to the buffet line. Oh!
Hey! Joke about his weight. Well, I think that's enough about CC. Anything else on the Sabathia front we want to touch on?
No. I mean, aren't you glad that we got Matt LaPorta for him?
Good old Matt, Triple A All-Star, Matt LaPorta.
Got Michael Brantley, though.
No. No.
Yeah.
So today, Jason, talking about Pittsburgh Pirates baseball, like we usually do. Then after we talk Pittsburgh Pirates baseball, guess what we're going to talk about next?
Cleveland Indians baseball.
How did you know?
Well, I have my ways. Inside sources.
He's a regular Richard Justice over there.
Yeah.
Then we're going to go to a Seawolves shout-out, and we may even have a guest visit from our good friend, Dr. Britton. Maybe.
Dr. Garrett, depending on how his day at the hospital's going.
Yeah, on his hours.
Yeah.
So let's start off talking about Pittsburgh, Jason.
Tell me,
and
Pittsburgh.
Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. The we're going to start off with the bad news first, which is that Starling Marte is day-to-day with back tightness, which is not a good thing for Pittsburgh's lineup when Marte is not in it. And it started the other day. I guess he swung and he kind of tweaked it a little bit. And then, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, hit a ground ball, just kind of just jogged down the line. Like, I mean, you could tell something was definitely wrong. And that was when we found out he was having the back tightness. He had to come out of the game. Pittsburgh had all kinds of crazy configurations in the outfield. Apparently, Clint Hurdle had spoken to players about it ahead of time. Gabby Sanchez ended up in right at one point. It was a weird time. It's a weird time.
Well, so, that's what happens when you don't really have a right fielder.
Yeah, or when you do have a right fielder, but he's down in AAA.
And then all of a sudden you lose a left fielder.
Yeah, that's bad news. We had, I mean, Tabata was in center. I think Harrison was in left and Gabby was in right. It was a weird, weird day to be watching Pirates baseball. So, yeah, the sooner that he can come back, the better, because we called up Jeff Decker.
Oh,
who, by the way, somebody said that he pronounces his name Jeff, even though it's spelled with an A.
Who said that?
I can not confirm nor deny this. I heard it on the television. I want to say it was yesterday on Sunday Night Baseball. Shulman said something about it.
ESPN, they said that?
Yeah. I want to say that it came up like that.
They don't know.
Whatever, man. Who puts an A in their name and then pronounces it Jeff? I just don't understand. Don't understand. Anyways, so Marte, he's been hitting lower in the order, driving in runs, super productive since he got that bump. I wrote an article after his, I don't want to call it demotion, but more like relocation in the lineup, and just kind of analyzed the changes that Starling Marte needed to make immediately, which he did address within the first few games of hitting lower in the lineup, which was taking more pitches, being more selective at the plate. And since then, he's been an incredibly productive player. So hopefully that did kind of take that psychological pressure off of him of having to hit in the leadoff spot and feel like you need to be a catalyst for everything. Continuing with the triage, and I don't know if Dr. Garrett's going to touch on this. We'll have to see when he phones it in today. But Kutch has a sore left foot that he hurt trying to make a catch against Alan Craig. Says he's okay. He missed the game on Saturday. That was why we had Tabata and Josh Harrison left and running that crazy outfield. He said he didn't even want to miss Saturday's contest, but claims he's fully recovered now, played yesterday. You could tell he was kind of limping around at times. He's maybe not 100% comfortable on it. They have an off day today, so we'll see when we start that Milwaukee series what's going on. But obviously, when you're missing Starling Marte and Andrew McCutchen in your lineup that's league average, which we'll touch on a little bit more later on, that's not a good thing for productivity. I would even go as far to say that is a bad thing.
Yeah.
For productivity.
Doesn't Alan Craig miss time often because of a sore foot?
Yeah, Alan Craig has all kinds of weird, which is why.
But isn't that ironic?
I want to say at the beginning, yeah, that he hurt somebody else's foot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the bad juju from that baseball. just messing with it. And Ketch wasn't even close to catching the ball. That was the thing that was really agitating about the whole thing. Whatever, man.
What about your buddy who you still owe an apology?
El Toro?
I
have a feeling your children's children will be reminding me I need to write Pedro Alvarez an apology.
You'd be lucky if you're still alive.
That's the way I'd eat that ice cream, you're right.
The way you abuse your body.
Pampers. He's driving Pirates fans crazy. Like most Pirates fans, when you hear them talking, you know they're going to bring up Pedro Alvarez's average, which if that is how you look at Pedro Alvarez, you just look at his average, you are probably going to be very, very frustrated just looking at his average because it is not. 214 is his batting average on the season.
Because it is not good.
That is not considered a good batting average in the game of baseball. But as I always like to say, do you remember my rule for on-base percentage? What do I always say I like my on-base percentage to be relative to batting average?
Higher.
Do you remember my baseline is I like my on-base percentage to be 100 points higher than my batting average. If you're doing that, man, you're doing okay. And Pedro Alvarez hitting 214, on-base percentage 313. It's not like he's just going out there and having worthless at-bats. I mean, he's walking at an 11.9% clip this season, which is 2% higher than his career average. He's striking out way, way less. He's striking out 20.6% of his at-bats. Last season, just to put it in comparison, struck out 30% of his at-bats. I mean, he's being much more selective at the plate. So you kind of have to take a look at, you know, his strikeout rate's down 10%, his walk rate's up 2%. His BABIP is 222.
So what are you trying to tell me?
What I'm trying to tell you here, Jason, is it's like the prestige. Everything is not exactly how it looks. There's some underlying factors here. Now, we looked at this in depth last season, and I wanted like three or four articles that we wrote. Pedro Alvarez is his big problem, which is what do opposing teams like to do when Pedro Alvarez comes up to the plate?
Well, you're asking me?
Yeah, I know. I'm asking you. Yeah. What do other teams do when Pedro Alvarez comes up?
They strike him out.
Well, they strike him out, or they're going to shift against him.
Right.
And so when they shift against him, they know that they have a plan. Their plan is when you shift against somebody, what do you want that hitter to do? You can answer this one, too.
Hit into the shift.
Hit into the shift, right? Which is exactly what he's doing whenever teams shift against him. His ground ball rate as a pull hitter, when he's pulling the ball, is 70.3%.
Ugh.
When he pulls the ball into the shift, he's just hitting it right on the ground. Right into the shift. Now, you can look at him, and actually, as a pull hitter, I mean, he is kind of compensating the other 30% of the time that he's not pounding the ball right into the ground. I mean, as a pull hitter, he's still hitting 270, 378 slugging, 108 ISO. But that's primarily because when he pulls the ball and he's not hitting it on the ground, he is hitting it over the fence. And it is very hard to field a ball that has, in fact, gone over the fence.
That's true.
It's very difficult to defend that. So how does Pedro Alvarez solve this problem, you may ask? Go ahead and ask, Jason.
How does Pedro Alvarez solve this problem, you may ask?
I am glad that you asked, Jason. He needs to not hit the ball on the ground into the shift. Simple as that. Just solved your problem, Pittsburgh. Do not hit the ball on the ground into the shift. He kills the ball, and we looked at this last season in our bevy of articles. Maybe I'll even post them, some of the links together with this podcast. But when he hits the ball up the middle, he just punishes the ball. His OPS is over 1,000 this season when he hits the ball up the middle. So, I mean, it's not even that you have to say, oh, yeah, this guy needs to go the other way. He needs to drop down some bunts. He needs to, you know, hit some flares over the third baseman who's playing shortstop's head. Like, no, just get a good swing on the baseball and just hit it away from the shift. So, I mean, I feel like, and again, just like last season, Pedro Alvarez is going to correct this. His BABIP's not going to be 222 all season long. At some point, he will adjust like he did last season. And then he'll go on a little hot streak for a month, and Pittsburgh fans will love it because he's going to win like five games during that little stretch. But until then, we're going to hear everyone complain about his 214 batting average. And that's just the way it'll be, because that's the cycle of love, hate in Pittsburgh.
Well, he's contributing 0.1 more right now. So you got that going for you.
Yeah, so we got that going, huh?
He's only got to contribute three more, you know, 3.0 more to equal last year's total.
Yeah, those three stolen bases are probably helping out too. He's a little sneaky speed with El Toro. He's a rampaging bull, if you will. A rampaging bull.
Right.
Sounds
like you're at a water park.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the pipes in my house.
I see. Pipes. So, what about that apology letter?
Maybe I'll get to it this summer. We'll see. I probably do owe him an apology. You're right. Yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll get that for you for a little gift for your little tyke there.
Oh, there you go.
You can frame it, put it up on the wall.
You think I value it that much, huh?
There's a part of me that thinks that that would satisfy you a lot if I had to apologize to him.
Well, it would, but I still wouldn't put it up on the wall.
It'll be written really eloquently, don't worry. All right, moving on. Offense in Pittsburgh, scoring 4.03 runs per game, good for 19th overall in baseball. Not great. Not as bad as last season, so that's good, I guess. That's to put it into perspective, that's a team OPS plus of 98. So OPS plus adjusted to 100 as league average. I mean, they're basically like right around that league average offensive production. Now here's where things get a little murky, which is they're scoring 4.03 runs per game, which is better than last season. They're allowing 4.35 runs per game, which is significantly worse than last season, although good for 18th in baseball. It is still not stellar, however, as that is, like, if you equate it out to an ERA plus, that is an ERA plus of 90, again, adjusted to league average of 100. So not good also there. Yeah, basically, they're like league average or worse in just about every statistical category, offense or defense or pitching. I shouldn't say defense, but offense or pitching. Just not good. Just very mediocre.
Well, I mean, how does that – you think you're going to turn this around or what?
I don't know, because here's the thing that I felt really confident about going into this season, and you, all of our listeners probably know this too, but love the bullpen. Just love the bullpen. Bullpen has been a big part of the problem in some of these close games. I just don't know, Jason. I don't know. I'd feel a lot better if Gregory Polanco was in right field.
Take it if up, we had, Bill Huntington, man.
I gotta get him on the horn to get to the bottom of this tomfoolery. I don't know if they right the ship. I mean, I feel good that the offense is being productive-ish relative to last season. It's when I look at it, it seems like everything that went right last season, where they were winning close games, they had those, you know, like big breakout performances from players like Jason Greeley and Mark Melancon and Jeff Locke at the beginning of the season. Forget the second half. It just feels like is that that kind of stuff isn't going right this season, or it's not going, I should say, I guess it's not going right frequently enough. You don't get the same vibe from that team, and you're getting good production from players like Neil Walker. Neil Walker's having a stellar start to his season this year. I don't know. I mean, I just don't know if it's going to be enough to carry this team to that, at least that wild card performance that, you know, we would be hoping for.
Right.
It's kind of a depressing podcast. Sorry, man. I'm feeling really like I'm just dragging everybody down here. Hopefully you're a little more positive than me.
I'm always more positive.
Yeah, 20 years of losing, man. It's really beaten me down to the point where, like, the first sign of something negative happening, I'm just like, this just like 96 all over again. Last thing, yeah, I guess no game tonight, being Monday night, but Pittsburgh travels to Milwaukee for a series starting tomorrow. And this will be the first time that the Buccos and Brewers have squared off since the Carlos kerfluffle there. So that should be entertaining, if nothing else.
Do you think is Gerrit Cole going to pitch?
Yeah, he's actually slated to start tomorrow. So.
Oh, man.
Yeah, just right away. We're just diving right into it. What? Yeah, so that's pretty much it for me.
So, that's, I mean, what's your overall prognosis here, man?
I mean, it's not dire. I'm not going out into full-on panic mode.
But you're worried.
But I am... I would be safe to say I am perspiring a bit now, over the start of this team.
Isn't Wandy going to start soon?
Oh, good Lord. Wandy. I will be so happy when I just don't even have to think about Wandy Rodriguez anymore.
But he is going to start soon, right?
He's, I don't even know what Wandy's deal is. Wandy is apparently, he's still alive.
I heard he's going to start this week again.
That's the general sentiment. I think he's supposed to start Thursday. What is it? Tomorrow's Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. He's supposed to start Thursday in Milwaukee, which Milwaukee, aggressive hitting team, not a lot of confidence there. Wandy Rodriguez, you know, he's kind of like CC Sabathia in that his just velocity is awful. He's thrown 20 innings this season. His home run per nine is 3.15. In his 20 innings, just getting shellacked.
Yeah.
Go ahead and prorate that out. That's about 6 or 7 home runs in 20 innings. That's not good. Apparently, I mean, Hurdle said everything's all right with the knee. Just needed to be drained. So, I don't know. He didn't mention about anything else being wrong, which is kind of alarming because it seems like everything else is wrong with Wandy. But he's made progress and is feeling better. That's a direct quote from Clint Hurdle.
That's good.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm glad he's feeling better. I do really hope he is on the mend, but that's not really going to help our 16-21 start. So, yeah, big series against Milwaukee, I guess. Good luck and Godspeed, Buccos.
Sounds so optimistic.
That's all I got, man. I'm telling you, the 16 and 21 starts really beat me down.
All right, well, in Cleveland, we're 18-20, so we're a little ahead of you guys.
You're hanging in there.
Yeah,
hanging in there.
And
your whole division, everybody's like 5 games back, aren't they? Nobody's like
pretty much, yeah.
Everybody's just like right there behind Detroit.
Yeah, not like you guys. You guys are like 7.5 back.
Yeah, we're like 7.5 games back already.
Well, so in Cleveland, they had that rough week last week where they got swept by the Giants and swept by the Angels. And this week, you know, they kind of got things a little straightened out. Would have been probably a really good week, except John Axford imploded, which...
Oh, the Axeman.
We'll get to that in a minute, but the best.
I'm saving my witty pun for okay. That minute whenever we're ready.
All right. Well, so the best thing this week for the Indians was their starting pitching, led really by Corey Kluber, who's just been putting up like one amazing outing after another, and Justin Masterson. Kind of ticking up a little in velocity. He's creeping back like 94, even hit 95 maybe. McAllister's pitching well. Salazar's hanging in there. And the little cowboy, Josh Tomlin, as I predicted, is, you know, coming in, throwing strikes and keeping them in game, which is what they needed. And I think I'm sure there was some kind of service time calculation with Trevor Bauer, but I really do think that part of it was at that time the rotation was putting such a burden on the bullpen that they almost couldn't risk Bauer coming up and struggling. Because it was like, that is not what we need right now. We need
just someone, putting that extra stress on.
Like, the whole point of getting rid of Carrasco is getting someone that can pitch six innings every 5 days. You know what I mean? Not someone who's going to implode and only make it two innings. So I think that was kind of part of the reason for choosing Tomlin, and he's delivered. And like I said, Kluber's been unbelievable lately. Let me pull up his game like here. One game he got hosed by Axford, blowing the save. But he went 8 innings against the White Sox and gave up 3 hits and 1 run while striking out 13. And then he went 6 2/3 innings against the Rays. He gave up 9 hits, but only allowed 2 runs and struck out 9. So he's been pitching well. And in the rotation as a whole, the Indians have the highest K per 9 in all of baseball at 9.16 per 9.
Right.
And they have, gotta resort here. And with walks, you know, they're kind of a whole extreme here. So like they have the best K per 9 in baseball, and then they're in the bottom 10 in walks, and then they're in, so they're allowing a lot of walks. It's like 3.39, but then they're in the bottom 10, as in the good 10, the good bottom, in allowing home runs per 9, only allowing, actually they're second to last in home runs per 9, 0.65. They have right under 50% ground ball rate and a team ERA of 3.85. But their FIP is 3.26 because their defense has been so horrible. So, I mean, really, you know, that's all in all, that's pretty good. That's a stabilizing bunch that is providing some good outings for them. And to put it on the flip side, before we'll come back to Axford. So that leaves, because if you remember a few podcasts ago, I said they starting pitching's bad, the offense is bad, and the defense stinks. So that takes care of the starting pitching. That group's coming around.
All right.
Now, when we get to the offense, as Drubal Cabrera and Mike Aviles and Michael Bourne have been hitting, which it's great to see as Drubal Cabrera hitting again. And, I mean, he's been on a tear the last week or so. And I was actually joking this weekend with our old buddy Bob that poor Jose Ramirez, who, you know, we all want to see get to play, he hasn't got a chance to hardly sniff the field because Cabrera and Aviles are just like clubbing everything in sight. Like Aviles is hitting like 500 in the last week.
Right.
So Terry Francona not going to take him out. The one person who's not hitting still is Carlos Santana. I think at this time last week, he was in the middle of that like 3-game hitting hot streak where he hit like 4 home runs in 3 days or something. Well, since that time, now I think he got 2 hits yesterday, but before that, I think he was 1 for 22 since those 3 games.
Oh, that's not good.
Now, to your point, let me pull up his average here. You're talking about, you know, how you like your on-base percentage to be 100 points higher.
Right, right, right.
His batting average is 148, but his on-base is 319.
Oh, that's
like,
pretty good.
His on-base is pretty stellar just normally. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, you... you'd usually see a little higher from Santana, but if a lot of players had a 319 on base, that's pretty much league average, you know?
Right, right, right.
But, I mean, he's doubling, actually more than doubling his average.
Which is, like, good.
But
like, not good.
Could you imagine what his on base would be if he was hitting, like, oh, I don't know, something crazy, like 240?
Yeah, if some baseballs were actually finding some holes somewhere.
Yeah, so his slugging is 281, which for Carlos Santana, for anyone, is not good.
Right.
Especially for someone that has a lot of power. Now, what's interesting is it could be worse because he's only got I just had it here today when I was writing Noise on the North Coast. Oh, a message from our sponsors. I believe he's only got FanGraphs is like trying to cut me off right now. I think he has 19 hits on the whole season, and 9 of them are extra base hits. So I mean, that just tells you how nothing is going right for Carlos Santana right now.
Yeah, he's hitting the ball hard.
When he hits it, he's hitting it hard. He's got, I think, 4 home runs and 5 doubles and then 10 singles. And he's still walking 20% of the time, and he's striking out about 19% of the time. His ISO is 133, which is very low for him. It was interesting, and I wrote about it in Noise on the North Coast today. When you look at all his peripheral stats, there's a couple things that come out, and it kind of goes along with what you were saying about Pedro Alvarez. He is hitting less line drives, but that goes right along with having a low BABIP. I mean, line drives are hits that normally fall in most of the time. So if your line drive percentage gets cut in half, it's going to have a bad effect on your BABIP. The problem is these numbers, like, they're pretty similar. I mean, they're actually kind of skewing towards the 2011 season, which was when he hit 239 for the whole year. So that's, I don't like to, you know, make that connection. But really, the problem is, like, pitchers are pitching him the same. He's kind of dividing up his hits the same categories. It's that people are shifting, and he's just crushing the ball right into the shift. And you know, we were talking about this weekend how from the left-hand side, he uses more of the field, but from the right-hand side, he's very much a pull hitter, and they're exploiting that. And that's something he's going to have to work on because, you know, he's still walking. He's not losing too much plate discipline. Things aren't falling in, and it's not all luck because defenses are adjusting for him. So that'll be something, you know, we kind of have to monitor, I guess, is how Carlos Santana continues to handle those shifts and whether he can put the ball the other way or maybe lay down bunts, try and go back up the middle. You know, who knows what he can do, but he's got to figure something out because just absolutely scorching the ball into the teeth of the shift is not going to get you that many more hits. You still there?
Oh, yeah. just soaking it all in, man.
You're just quiet, man.
Just soaking it all up. I'm still contemplating the start of the season. I was up until midnight watching that game last night, Jason. I'm exhausted emotionally and physically. This short season just been hell for me.
Well, I hate to bring you down even further, but now we need to talk about Yan Gomes.
Oh, don't, Jason. Don't stab me in the heart while I'm down.
Because the defense...
It's his defense, isn't it?
The defense of the team is kind of coming around. And, like, this weekend they had quite a few good defensive entire outings, you know, good games. I would say that the Rays series was a good defensive series in whole. Except for Yan Gomes, who's still struggling. And let me pull it up. He caught 710 innings last year And I think he had three errors and four pass balls. I'm trying to get to it right now. But I'm pretty sure that's it. Yeah, 710 innings, three errors, and four pass balls. So far this year, he's only caught 262 innings, and he has nine errors and four pass balls. So if you want to go all advanced on me, last year he had positive 11 defensive runs saved and positive 7 stolen base runs saved.
Okay.
This year he comes out to a 0 in both categories. So he's not hurting us yet, but he's not providing the same kind of, you know, defensive ability that he was last year. And really, I would imagine the only way he's hanging on is his pitch framing. So Sandy Alomar, of course, has been working with Yan Gomes, and he was quoted in the Plain Dealer as saying, and I'm going to ask you this, your opinion as a former catcher and a former coach of high school catchers. He said that Yan Gomes' whole problem is that his feet are too fast and his arm and his legs are not synchronized, completely goofing up his mechanics, and he's airmailing these throws, you know, straight out to Michael Bourne. Does that sound legitimate to you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're completely out of sync like that, that kind of stuff can – that'll definitely start throwing things off. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if your arm starts drifting back and things start getting ahead, yeah, ooh, that's not good.
So he also said that it's difficult to spend too much time working on this because he's catching every day and he needs to – basically, you don't want to have him down in the catcher's crouch for 3 hours before the game and then tell him to go catch a nine inning.
Right. Doing drills and stuff, that's not helpful.
Right. So there's that problem. And then Alomar tacked on the end this little quote that's interesting. He'll be all right. He just needs to get confidence in himself again. So he's basically saying he's got the yips.
That sounds just like baseball talk to me. You know what I mean?
But what does that say to you?
He's got he just needs some confidence. Yeah, that's I mean, like you said, it's something. I mean, you can fix it. Mechanical things you can always fix.
Right.
It's just a matter of, do you have the time to do it? Can you give him a couple days off, you know, prior to a travel day or something where you can work on that kind of stuff, just to get him used to what you know, making a good throw feels like, you know, making sure that you're getting everything back in alignment.
Right.
Yeah, that's tough, man. That's a tough situation.
Well, that's the situation he's in. He's starting to hit a little bit again, but the defense, it's not really coming around. And kind of makes me worried because I thought they were a little quick on the trigger with that big extension.
As in you don't like it, or...
I just think...
You just wish they'd have kind of waited a little bit.
I think, you know, you could have waited 1 year. The guy had a grand total of 322 plate appearances. He only caught...
Half a season or so.
He caught 710 innings in one season, and you give him a big whopper of an extension. Now, I understand, you know, it's still only... $23 million over 6 years. It's not really that, you know, it's not crazy money we're talking about, but
right.
The thing is,
and you're also talking about you're buying out, you know, arbitration years basically.
Right. But the thing is, this is what makes me worry. I know the defensive metrics don't usually have a lot of variation in them. But when the Indians acquired him, he was not viewed as a front-of-the-line defensive catcher.
Right, yeah.
That just is kind of like lingering in my brain. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, what if he – maybe he is just an average defensive catcher. And that's better than what Carlos Santana was. But maybe that was like he just had a really, really good year last year, and you're not going to see another year like that.
That would make me sad.
But so then the question is, and I don't know enough about, you know, contract extensions and young catchers in the market. Did they pay him like an average defensive catcher or like a premium defensive catcher? Because last year he put up the numbers of a premium defensive catcher. So that's kind of where my mind's at on Yan Gomes right now.
That's a sad, sad day when we had to have this conversation, Jason. You really are just bringing me down even further.
Maybe he'll start throwing people out again. I don't know.
No, I hope so. He was so much fun to watch last season. Maybe it was just that Carlos Santana's defense was so bad that anything else looked great.
Well, I'm going to pull up Carlos's defensive run save this year. I'm curious now.
At third base?
Well, no, at catcher.
At catcher? How many games has he had at catcher?
Huh?
Like five? He hasn't played that many games at catcher, has he?
He's played every game Yan Gomes hasn't, except for like... He got seven games at catcher.
Seven.
And he's got no errors and no pass balls.
All right.
He has defensive run save of one.
Okay, all right.
Stolen base run saved of one. So right now, it's not looking good. Small sample size, obviously.
Right.
At third base, he has a defensive run save of negative two.
So, yeah, which is not great.
No. You want me to pull up Pedro Alvarez's?
Please.
I was already clicking on it. Don't worry.
Please do. Please bring up Pedro Alvarez's.
Let's see. Third base, Pedro. Defensive run saved. Negative one.
Negative one.
Woo!
That could have been worse.
Those two are fighting it out, man.
Could have been worse.
Fighting it out would be the worst defensive third baseman with the lowest batting average in the league.
I know every time Pedro Alvarez boots a ball that I'm going to be getting a text message from like five people just like, rah!
Yeah. So you want to talk about John Axford a little?
The Axeman. I guess you could say, Jason, the Axeman
got
the axed.
he's been demoted from the closer's role until further notice, although it's been supposedly promised to him that when he's all mechanically straightened out, he will return.
Okay, all right.
And they are not naming a closer in his absence.
Doing the old closer by committee, huh?
That's right. Apparently, it's going to be a combination of Cody Allen, Brian Shaw, Mark Zepchinski, and Scott Acheson.
Scott Acheson, huh? You don't say.
Yeah, non-roster invite. Suddenly in the closer by committee group. Don't you love baseball?
Good for him.
So, Brian Shaw got the save yesterday. And, you know, we'll save the Axford discussion for a moment. I don't have a problem with the closer by committee, and I don't have a problem not using Cody Allen to save a lot of games.
Now, why not, Jason? Because I'm sure there are a lot of Indians fans that would be saying, why don't we want to put our best player in at closer?
Right. Well, and this is where, you know, Tito's got to, like, he's got to be thinking about 10 moves ahead here. And if he's got to go, if it's a tight game, it's one run game, and he's got to go through the middle of the order in the seventh inning or the eighth inning, that might be the time that you want to use Cody Allen, because you still need to protect that one run lead. And it's more work, say, to protect it against those middle of the order or dangerous hitters in the seventh inning than if you have to face the bottom of the order in the ninth inning.
So what you're saying is, it might not be the best strategic move to put your closer or your best relief pitcher
right
in a designated role like closer.
Right, and that's kind of what Tito's been saying the whole year is he doesn't – it's not that he doesn't think Cody Allen can close, but he always says, I like to be able to use Cody to put out a fire whenever I think it's necessary.
Some may say the most important part of the game.
Right. Like the other night when John Axford had littered gas cans all over the field and loaded the bases with a one run – or no, it was a three run lead. But he loaded the bases and they had to finally call on Cody Allen to get the last out.
Just keeping things spicy out there for you.
So my point is, you know, if you have to face, say you're playing the Angels and you have to face Trout and Pujols and say Josh Hamilton's healthy and, you know, all those overpaid guys that they have out there in the seventh inning, would you rather put Scott Acheson or Cody Allen out there with a one run lead?
Right, exactly.
But when you go out further, it's like, okay, well, if we're facing them now, chances are in the ninth inning, we're going to face, like, you know, guys with a 200 batting average. I don't know who's at the bottom of the Angels lineup anymore, but like they'll dig up like Hank Conger off the bench or something.
You know who's in the bottom of the Angels lineup right now?
Who?
Former Erie Seawolves manager Chris Cron's son.
Oh yeah, he is, and he can't hit. He can field, but he can't hit.
CJ Cron?
CJ Cron, yeah. He made a couple really good catches against the Indians. He's pretty good on defense, but yeah, that's the kind of guy I'm talking about.
Yeah, he's at the bottom of the lineup. Although I will say, he did hit the longest home run for the Angels this season, estimated to be 456 feet.
Hey, even a blind squirrel finds a nut.
Just lucked into it.
Sometimes you just run into one. But that's the situation, the Cleveland bullpen. Now, what do you want to say?
Nothing. I just wanted to get that pun out there.
You don't have any comment about Axford, really?
No, I just wanted to say that Axford, and I took off sunglasses while I said it, but you couldn't see that because it's audio, not video.
True.
Maybe we should look into video so that when I do funny things like that, along with my puns, people can see them.
Then I'd have to take a shower.
You. Jason would have to shower prior to recording. Cannot see Jason all greased up, ready to go on the air.
Grease monkey.
It is a sight to behold. Oh man, video would add a whole new dynamic. Maybe we'll do that sometime. Let's record a podcast video instead of an audio podcast.
You know,
and post it to the YouTubes.
Okay, well, YouTubes maybe, but I was going to say, you know how much space that would take up on our Podbean server?
Oh, probably all of the space?
Probably. We wouldn't be able to do a podcast for a month.
We have to save up all of our minutes, like the T-Mobile plan.
Yeah.
Just bank them all up.
That's right.
For one hoorah. So is that it out of Cleveland? That's our...
I think so.
Okay, all right. Can we give a quick Seawolves shout out?
You can. Please do.
Well, the Seawolves are currently in fourth place in the how's this? I like to call it the Eastern League West. Some may call it the Eastern League Western Division. I just like to call it the Eastern League West.
You know who's in first place in that division?
Oh, let me tell you who's in first place. The Akron Rubber Ducks, which, by the way, I still cannot get over the spelling of this word Rubber Ducks. I've seen it spelled multiple different ways all over the place. Rubber Ducks is a compound word, two words together as one.
With two capitals.
Yet Ducks is capitalized, much like the Sea Wolves.
Yeah, it's like a minor league baseball thing.
Except I feel like in real life, I'm gonna have to Google this here really quickly. In real life, is rubber duck two words?
Yeah, because there's not such a thing as a rubber duck. It's an adjective in that case. But in this case, we're talking about a singular thing, a rubber duck. Do
A rubber duck.
you see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying, and it makes absolutely zero sense.
Oh.
You're not allowed to have an adjective describing your mascot in the name of your
You can, but then it would be two separate words.
two separate words, right? Yeah. I mean, is there something wrong with like the Reading Fightin' Phils
Yeah, I hate that name.
or the New Hampshire Fisher Cats?
But a Fisher Cat's a real thing.
Right. So, I mean, so is a rubber duck. A rubber duck is a real thing.
No, it's
Why don't you make it two words like a Fisher Cat?
No, a rubber duck's not a real thing.
I have a rubber duck in my house.
You have a rubber ducky.
A rubber ducky, right? Sure, whatever. I mean, call it what you will.
What I'm saying is that.
Wikipedia refers to it as a rubber duck.
Right, but what I'm saying is a Fisher cat has like a genus, and a species. Like
But rubber duck is, I don't think that has anything to do with the spelling of the
I'm saying.
thing.
That's why Fisher cat is two words. It's a real item. And that's not how you spell real things. When you spell fake things, you can spell them however you want. Like put
You just
rubber and then capital D duck and it's all one word.
like we could call a team the Philadelphia Power Rangers and just combine Power Rangers together because they're not real.
Sure.
Okay, all right, that's your rule for team names. Okay, all right, Jason's rule for team names. You can combine words together in the team name if they are not real things. This has completely gone off the rails, by the way. The
So,
Seawolves.
I'm going to make my final argument here. So
Okay.
what I'm proposing here is
Okay.
that if the Anaheim Mighty Ducks wanted to combine their name,
they would be in the right.
I would have no problem with that.
That would be acceptable to you. That could be quite the rebranding of the Mighty. Instead of changing the mascot, just combined the names. Yes. Okay. Seawolves, fourth place in the Eastern League West, in the Western portion of the Eastern League, or the Eastern League Western Division, if you will. They are currently at 14-20. Tomorrow they start a series against the Trenton Thunder, the New York Yankees affiliate. And then
This weekend,
this weekend, guess who they play?
the
See, even
actual
in my notes,
Ducks.
I spelled this as two words in my notes. Here, let me.
Incorrect.
Nope. Here we go. Deleted that. It is now correct. Rubber ducks, one word.
Yes, this weekend they
Yeah.
play the Akron Rubber Ducks again.
Are you going to any games this weekend? Not obviously not Saturday.
Not Saturday, but and probably not Sunday. Maybe Friday.
Ooh, you want to go Friday? Let me know.
I
We
will.
go cheer on Lindor.
I saw the game last Tuesday. You saw the game last Monday.
Yep. Let's go. Let's tentatively. Can we tentatively plan on going Friday? Maybe do a little write-up together.
I don't know, man. It's getting serious now.
I mean,
I don't know
like not
if I'm
at the
ready to.
game,
I don't know if I'm
but
ready.
maybe later after the game. We could do a team write-up.
Let's just go on with the podcast right now.
All right, anyways, Ramon Cabrera, Dean Green, Wade Gaynor, Aaron Westlake, and fan favorite Erie Seawolf, Eugenio Suarez, all off to great starts this season. Well, I shouldn't say great, but some are great, and some are good. But for example, an example of a great start would be Wade Gaynor, third baseman for the Erie Seawolves. People love Wade Gaynor because Wade Gaynor hit a ball on top of the Erie Insurance Arena, which I still call the Erie Civic Center, which, if you are not familiar with Joliet Park, is a very long ways. It is a long distance from home plate. He has six home runs, just mashing the ball. He's hitting 282 356, 641 triple slash. That's good for a 997 OPS. That 641 slugging is ridiculous. Wow. And Eugenio Suarez, really, really likes Suarez. He's had a great start to this season too. Other than he's made some quite a few errors, which I've been privy to see a few. But Suarez, 5 home runs also so far throughout the course of the season, 11 walks. His triple slash, 270, 328, 500, good for an 828 OPS. If you like combining numbers like on base and slugging, that is what you will find. So, yeah, if you get a chance this weekend, Rubber Ducks playing the Erie Seawolves at home for the Seawolves at Geriot Park. Make it out there. It's a hell of a good time. Hell of a good time. Okay, you know, learned before we wrap this up at the last Buck Night. You know what we learned?
What's that?
Can I tell you what we learned? How about that?
Tell me.
I will prompt you into this discussion. So this guy dressed in a night outfit, like a man who might go save a princess trapped in a tower.
Okay.
So knight, but like a knight outfit, like you might find at Party City. So imagine that, just running around the stadium, not really doing knightly things. And he doesn't talk. It's kind of weird. You ever see Donnie Darko?
Yeah.
Imagine instead of a giant bunny, just a man in a plastic knight outfit purchased probably at Party City. Just creeping on everybody. Like we have pictures of this knight just standing behind people, not saying a word, just being kind of generally spooky. Eventually, we all get kind of creeped out. We tweeted the Erie Seawolves, hey, what's up with this knight? Is this knight like here for some kind of special thing? Or is this just like some creepy... What we were worried about is like some kind of person who's just really strange sneaking into all of our pictures.
Okay.
Turns out this knight, sanctioned by the Erie Seawolves, he is this knight... is actually, his name is Buck Knight.
So this should be Sir.
Sir Buck Knight.
Yeah.
I think you have to pronounce the syllables differently. I don't think you want to call him Sir Buck Knight. But maybe Sir, with the emphasis on Sir. Sir Buck Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clever play on words by them. Greg Coleman, general manager of the Erie Seawolves, tweeted us a response. We were very, very nervous about this man in a knight costume. I think he needs some kind of Seawolves insignia or some sort of Seawolves paraphernalia. Is that what I want?
Yeah.
Is that the word? Yeah, paraphernalia. He needs some kind of indication that he is a Buck Knight serving the will of the Seawolves front office.
Well, you know, word's getting around.
Well, yeah, now it's spreading like wildfire now that Tri-State of Mind's been on it.
Right.
We're just spreading that like a dandelion exploding on a beautiful summer day.
Oh, nice.
There's some figurative language for you. So, Seawolves, howl of a good time. Well, Jason, I think that's going to wrap it up for us today.
I think so.
What do you think? I think we did well today. I'm feeling a little more upbeat after the Seawolves shout-out.
That's good. I'm glad you're feeling better.
I am not quite as down as when I was talking about Starling Marte's back problems and Andrew McCutcheon's physical woes. So I think we'll take this time now and thank our listeners. So thanks, listeners. We ask if you're giving us a listen on the old iTunes there, give us a rate and review. We would appreciate that. We'll be recording probably sometime next week. I don't know. Keep your ears to the ground. We'll let you know. But in the meantime, if you want to check us out on the interwebs, you can do so at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, This is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
This is Andy Burdick.
And Jason Ruggiero.
And Mrs. Finkbeiner.
The hazel-haired maiden.
Wishing Bob and Kelly the happiest of days forward.